Let us start off today with a little meditation. Let the body be perfectly balanced, comfortable, free from all strain. Let it be as easy as possible, and above all, as still as possible, and maintain that stillness of the body right through. Let the rhythm of your own breathing establish itself. Just quietly, no special deep breathing or anything like it. Just your normal breathing. Feel the diaphragm moving gently, comfortably. The lower jaw relaxed, the head perfectly poised upon the neck. And maintain that complete stillness of the body with your own established breath rhythm for a few moments. Continue to maintain the stillness of the body and the rhythm of the breath. And you will notice that this rhythm of the breath is a profound meaning of stillness. It is neither static nor does it move from one position to another spatially. It is the life rhythm itself which works unobstructedly through the still body. If and when this is the case, the body ceases to be an obstruction to the profoundest aspects of mind, right at its own transcendent level. And all the senses and the sense functions are completely at peace. If you like to practice this sort of thing, especially when you go to bed and are in bed, or when you wake up in the morning, you may notice some very interesting things happening, special to yourself. The senses and the sense functions, as is said in some of the Upanishads, like the Subala Upanishad, meet their ending. That is to say, they are no longer disturbing factors, putting oneself out of rhythm with the great universal rhythm. Each sense, separately or in conjunction with another sense, comes to an ending. And when that happens, a totally new dimension of being and consciousness comes to life. And you know it. And it will maintain itself provided the body remains perfectly still and the breath rhythm vibrates rhythmically in tune with that stillness of the body. You will find all your problems, your difficulties appearing in their true perspective, and as such their disturbing aspect is resolved into the understanding of their true nature. And it is in that moment of clarity in the mind that you will have the inspiration to know what to do. Remember, this is not very easy. It takes long practice to realize these things. But if you can do it, it will open up wonderful vistas within yourself. Always bear in mind the indispensability of perfect purity. No demands on life. One has to learn to be still so that the self, which realizes its own uniqueness, is completely freed of all selfness. Then you will experience something at least of the meaning of the spiritual life in terms of transcendent power in action. You will also find in this way that emotions and thoughts, the entire thought process, will come to its ending. Now note carefully that the body in itself and its own internal physiological activities, the emotions, the problems, the flow of discursive thoughts, and the whole thought process is a vast complex which is a superficial disturbance in our whole self. The inner depths of being are everlastingly peaceful. And this peace and plenitude of the inner self, which never intrudes upon or tries to force the superficial disturbance to be quieted, will be allowed to come out. and express itself. What happens thereby is that your particular destiny in life, unbeknown by the superficial mind, has the chance of finding expression and fulfillment. You have often heard me say, live by letting live. This is the sort of thing I have in mind when I use that phrase. If oneself, the superficial, disturbed self, the external turmoil, is just allowed to settle down by keeping the body itself perfectly still, then this inner life flows outwards through the whole manifested being, purifies it, and brings it to ease, to a state of perfect ease and harmony with this inner spiritual reality which lies outside all discursive thought, all intellectual shapes, and all speech. Its after effects in our daily life will undoubtedly show itself. This is one of the old esoteric secrets, actually. You can discover it for yourself if you have that kind of ability to discover. Or if, as in this case, you are hearing it said by someone, just let it lie quietly in the storehouse of your own mind. If it is of any use to you, it will take effect. If not, it won't do you any harm. Now let us consider another very important question. Everyone in the world seeks happiness. He wants to be happy. And of the great religious teachers, it is very interesting to note that the Buddha, more specifically perhaps than any of the others, declared outright that the ill state, the evil state, the suffering state, its origin and its the way to its extinction is what I teach. The deliverance from suffering. He does not say, I will show you the way to happiness. But the purport of his entire teaching is that through the deliverance from suffering, from evil rather than suffering, the ill state, which is essentially the state of one's own mind, with the deliverance from the ill state, there is bound to be happiness. But he wouldn't define it, simply because true happiness is indefinable. So you see where our trouble comes in. We seek happiness, but we have a very clear conception of what we mean by happiness. Dancing, polo, world travel, entomology, being a world conqueror, all sorts of, and worst of all, self-indulgent. In fact, all our definitions of happiness are the perfect roads to misery, to the ill state. Perfect roads. But we don't appreciate this. We may subscribe to it intellectually. But right within our, let me put it this way. The well, the very, very deep well of our mind, and particularly what we nowadays commonly call the unconscious depths. This deep well is filled with all sorts of misconceptions of happiness and with the drives to produce this kind of happiness as misconceived by us. So we rebel against life. We think life has given us a raw deal. Of course we have suffered. Of course we do suffer. Things come along. But you know how it is. We all feel, oh, nobody in the world suffers like I do. I, of course, am the only pebble on the beach. The beach is just myself. It's not more extensive than that. And of course, therefore, I'm the only pebble on it. See, we are so caught up in these illusions. And these illusions are spun out because of our conditioning, because of our drive, our chase, our fevered pursuit of sensational excitement, delight, pleasure, all the time intending that pursuit must of necessity exclude everything that doesn't belong to my definition of my pursuit. In one word, pain, difficulty, loss, discomfort, worldly insecurity, and so forth. But worldly insecurity is an inescapable fact. Whatsoever comes into being and perishes is insecure. There's no security in that, of course. Never can be. Nor can there be security in what we call the deep truths we have seen. There can be no security in the conceived God or heaven or the Buddha or Zarathustra or holiness, because you see, we define all these things. The reality of these things, of each and every one of them, is there. But that reality is reality only insofar as it is unbesmirched by my definitions of them. What I can define, I have limited, I have grasped. And because I have limited, I am a jailer of that which I have limited. But in that very act, I myself have become the prisoner. If I hold your hand and don't let go, you see, well, I'm also caught by my catching your hand. There is no freedom. And in the absence of that profundity of freedom, there is neither truth, nor beauty, nor love, nor wisdom, nor goodness, nor anything which is real. Now, let me relate this to the little meditation we practiced. Everything comes to its ending. The activity of the senses. Let's say a few words about that. Certain things we see with our eyes. And we think, oh, we are seeing this. But that statement that I am seeing, say, a tree, depends upon the fact that I am at a certain distance from the tree. Let me come closer and closer and closer to the tree. And there comes the point when my eyes fail to function properly. It becomes a blur. And finally, it's what's there right against my eye may be anything at all. I wouldn't know the distinction between a tree and a donkey or a grain of sand or whatever it is if I'm sufficiently close to it as far as my sense of sight is concerned. But when the sense of sight ceases to operate, it comes to its ending. In the case of the tree, if I go still closer, my sense of touch will take over from there. You see? But there comes the point when all the senses will come to their ending in the stillness. But this does not mean dissolution into vacuity. This is the mistake people make. Because if you can practice this successfully, you will find that although the senses have ceased to function, instead of there being a vacuity, this new dimension of consciousness opens up. Don't ask me, what is this new dimension of consciousness? There are no words in the language to describe it. And there are no words in the language to describe it because thought cannot picture that which is not finite. The infinite cannot be pictured. It cannot be heard, it cannot be tasted, it cannot be smelled. It cannot be imagined. You can't imagine the infinite. You will find that the mind starts playing tricks of bigness into the towards the confines of space, if there are any confines of space. That is the infinite. But what have you done, actually? Look at the picture that the mind has created. It is a child's sandcastle on the seashore. And you don't have the pleasure even of yourself getting rid of it, a wave comes and sweeps it away. And that's that, the result of all your effort. You see, so now thought cannot picture this. It's outside the realm of the thinking process. And remember that the thinking process is the activity of speech integrating into already known patterns the different sense impressions that have come to you during your lifetime. All our thinking, the what we call the definite thoughts as such, look at any one of them. Where do they originate? How do they originate? First, through the act of seeing something or hearing something or touching something, etc. And when that accumulates again and again, the percept, the collection of percepts is converted by the brain into a concept. And now comes the cold storage part of it. The concept dismisses the immediate percept and says, oh, that's a tree. So you don't look at that particular tree. So you see, this thinking process is the speech activity integrating, if you like, patterning all the sense impressions. And we just juggle about with them, like turning a kaleidoscope round and round, and charming little patterns, and they keep recurring. You will notice that your thinking process is always producing recurring patterns. They are not new creations. You're just changing the furniture about, the same old furniture. And we delude ourselves, we are creating profound philosophies. We are doing nothing of the sort. We are children on the seashore just playing with the sand. Now you see, when you become still like that bodily itself, and this is a great help, this complete stillness of the body, and it is not easy to attain, do remember that. This complete stillness of the body with no muscle tense or in a state of strain, nothing in a state of strain. And if you maintain it and let the breathe, the rhythm of the breath, just go on like that. You will find that all these things which hinder that inward spiritual reality from coming into free functioning through you, all those things will come to their ending. And that coming to the ending is one of the deep meanings of the word the void. It is not an emptiness in the sense of a nothingness. This void is a non-blocking of eternal reality, whatever that may be. And for all my life, as far as me, the speaking, thinking creature is concerned, for all my life, that eternal reality will ever be the unknowable, inexpressible, unimaginable, unthinkable. How does it affect, you might feel like asking, my practical daily life and my problems? Try it out and see what happens. If you can do it, you will find, how shall I put it? The sun rises and the mists begin to lift up and disappear. And the sun shines in a clear and a cloudless sky. And all is peace around you. Now the point which arises in connection with that is this. We all, sometime or other, experience this kind of thing. When that sun in the cloudless sky shines like that, and all is peace and clarity, How long do I let it be so? Don't I intrude upon it long before any clouds have begun to form again and shut out the sun? I am the greatest shutter out of my sunlight. The sunlight for me which is bestowed by infinite grace. But this is where the stillness and the silence becomes important. And do remember, this stillness is not supine inactivity. It is the cessation of all unnecessary disturbance which we mistake for activity. This silence is not a closing up, a shutting up of the book of life. On the contrary, it is reading the book of life by being the whole of it, everything simultaneously in the immediate now. We haven't begun to know the meaning of being alive or the zest of life. When this happens, you will know the richness, the inexhaustible marvel and wonder of being man, truly man. And when you really experience this, remember one important sign which will tell you whether you are being deluded or whether it is the real thing. If you are being deluded, you will be in the disturbance of ecstasy. The disturbance of being beside yourself. You are not beside yourself at all. You are just yourself, totally unresisting towards transcendent energy functioning freely through your psychophysical being. You know, this is something of the joys of heaven, as the theists express it, in actual fact here. It is not easy to put these things in words, but sometimes one can say the right sort of words. Now, this is the happy state. This is the state of ease. It is the state of freedom and peace. When all the sorrows of the world go to sleep. So you see, the Buddha's teaching, which, as far as the verbal presentation of what he was trying to teach is concerned, was presented in the apparently negative form. This is sound psychology. Happiness, peace, I don't know. What I do know is misery and disturbance. All right. Let me be with it. Because this disturbance, although superficial, as I said earlier, is me. How often have I said, I can't take a bit of myself which I don't like and throw it out of the window. Because if I were to do that in all earnestness and seriousness, You will find all of me outside the window in bits. You see, that is an act of self-hate, of self-oppression. And if I can oppress myself, I can more easily and successfully oppress you. So now, here perhaps is another approach to the understanding of this problem in connection with the word happiness. The longing for happiness stems from the reality of happiness, which is the living characteristic of the whole universe. We can't get rid of that. Just as love or beauty in its transcendence is the actual characteristic, is the actual stuff of the universe. I can talk in those terms quite freely without fear of any cynical criticism from the scientific-minded. No less than Eddington said that the only objective realities are life, mind, consciousness. Right, put them into a laboratory and carry out experiments if you can. What is their weight, their size, their color, their measure, their chemical properties or electrical, something else. You see, he said that. Therefore, I can also make bold and say that the actual stuff of the universe, the real stuff of the universe, is love, beauty, wisdom, and so forth. You know, in Sir Edwin Arnold's translation of the Lalita Vistara, or rather his poem The Light of Asia is based upon the Lalita Vistara, which is the legendary life of the Buddha. There is one amongst many other marvelous sentences. There is one very marvelous sentence. At the heart of being lies celestial bliss. Let that bliss do its work through you. It is my business to be patiently enduring, to be forbearing, to be understanding, to be awake and learning my lesson every split second of the day. Now, if I do that, that bliss at the heart, that celestial bliss at the heart of all being, will find its expression through the clean vessel. That is the point. You can, if you like, apply this in your own lives, to your own problems, and see how your particular desires and concerns to achieve this, to gain that, to establish this, to be secure here, etc., etc., are all related to this. What I do not try to grab tends to flow into me. You know how it is in physical life. Look at children playing. One child makes a grab at another, and the other immediately sort of reacts against this one. But supposing no such grab is made, Supposing that is the open state, the free state, the friendly state. Then the other comes in and there is a harmony. Or there can be a harmony at least. Our difficulty is that we see these things after many, many years, when we are nearing the end of the lane. But don't try to measure the reality of fulfillment and happiness in terms of time. The most miserable being in creation, if he has done right in even one tiny little insignificant thing throughout his life, at the moment of death, will suddenly find himself in the state of eternal reality. He'll be taken in that suddenly. It is very true of the death experience. We fear death, we dislike death. And thereby we are putting a distance, or trying to put a distance, between that which is the real power for transformation in us and ourselves. That we must not do. But if we learn to be still, one can practice it, as I suggested. When you're going to bed, when you're waking up in the morning, learn to be still. You will experience the reality of death, the liberator of our liberator for our finite being into non-finitude. And you experience that liberation in the state of finitude, the particular self.